Welcome to Soundbites on Del Mar. I'm your host, Mark Steiner. In the past year, we've brought you stories about the land, the farms, and the people of Delmarva. Throughout the year, it became clear to us that our listeners want to see the rural character of Delmarva survive. So we began to look deeper into certain questions. What will it take to keep farmers on their land? Is it possible to tend to the health of the environment and also to the needs of the people of our state and our nation? We will explore how farms, both urban and rural, can feed and employ our people, how we can get fresh produce to our citizens, how we can take care of the environment, and how we can create a 21st century food system that is more just and healthier for each of us and our world. We believe it can be done. Please join us as we explore how we can get there together. Today on Soundbites on Delmarva, we return to Nick's Organic Farm in Potomac, Maryland. You may have heard Nick Maravell on our show over the last few weeks. He's an organic farmer who grows seeds. In fact, he's the only organic seed farmer in Montgomery County. He's been on the same plot of land for 32 years, but now his future on the land is uncertain. We'll hear about that intense controversy in the second half of our program. But first, a little history, a little background on what is probably Maryland's first organic farm. Sophia Maravell, Nick's daughter, describes the history of the farm and their seed-saving operation.
My dad's been seed saving for 32 years on this organic land that he's been farming before the USDA organic standard even existed. He helped actually promote the national organic standard to become official. Why we're unique here at Nick's Organic Farm is because all of the farms around us have been developed, and you see all of the housing around. Because we're in suburbia, we're uniquely geographically place to be isolated from other genetically modified farms, because we're away from all farms. 90% about of our corn in this country is genetically modified. Because corn is wind pollinated, it allows us to save true to form or pure seed that's organic and non-genetically modified, because we have a miles of buffer difference of space between us and another farm that prevents cross-contamination of the genetically modified pollen. Because when genetically modified pollen spreads on the wind, whatever it touches, it's kind of like a virus, and it's a dominant gene.
Just genetically modified pollen, or all corn is like that?
Well, all corn will cross with whatever it meets, but the genetically modified, whatever it touches, will then make that corn plant also genetically modified. It will be dominant in the sense that its offspring, if we were to test and plant that, would have a GM sort of gene, I guess, in it. Mm-hmm. And then we have to test all of our seed every year. And if we tested, then Monsanto would have the right to sue us if we did, in fact, plant these seeds, such as we do each year, since we seed save and we plant those seeds next year. And we wouldn't be able to call it organic, because they're under the USDA National Organic Program, there isn't allowed to be any genetically modified organisms inside of your organic corn seed or your organic anything, your organic processed products. No GMO vaccines are allowed in your organic animals. So in order to be able to raise our organic seed stock, we need this isolation. And because farms are getting pushed out further and further out into sort of farmland, this 20-acre plot here is incredibly rare and unique and precious for this reason. If we're thinking about our national food security and saving seeds to promote genetic biodiversity for our future generations, this is going to help our country be resilient against plant diseases, pest infestations, problems that we've read about in our history books, such as the Irish potato famine that happened because we planted one variety of potatoes, that if we'd had maybe 30 strands or varieties of potatoes, that plague would have only hit maybe, you know, 3 out of the 30, maybe 10 out of the 30, but we wouldn't have put all our eggs in one basket. So it's just a smart way to be resilient and have diversity, genetic biodiversity in our seed stock.
Part of the reason 30 years ago I started growing seed was that I couldn't find the seed I needed for an organic system. Not commercially available. I had to produce my own seed. And also, as time went by, but this was 30 years ago, genetically modified was not an issue in seed stock because that was not a technology that was in use with regard to seed back then. But as time went by, the GMO issue became an added reason. But even before that, I needed to be able to find the seed, and preferably organic seed, because I wanted the seed to respond to an organic system. If seed is bred so that it needs to be watered and fertilized like a lawn, it's not going to work too well in my system, because we don't have irrigation and we don't use chemical fertilizers. Now, over here, I have some beans that were a very poor germination. See the amount of weed pressure in those beans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So, what I'm saying is, if you understand some of the principles of, you know, what you're doing with your farming techniques, you're able to vary your practices to help, your crop do better and your pests, your weeds, your diseases do worse. And that's what we're trying. Now, on this, I took a gamble, and the gamble wasn't too good. I'm trying to resuscitate some poor seed. We had slightly better seed, and you can see that's right in the middle. You can see that one's a lot stronger. So sometimes seed companies give me some very poor seed and ask me to bring it back, and it might take 2 or 3 years to continue to grow it out and rogue it out, separate out seeds or plants that are not part of the original stock, and it might be very poor germination, you get very low yields and things like that. So I do that, and then that keeps that variety alive and stops it from going extinct, and then the seed company is able to cross-sell that to other seed companies, and it gets out into the public domain again, and people keep these varieties alive. And as we face continuing challenges from things like climate change and new diseases and new insects, we're going to have to go back to our seed banks, our germplasm, our original seeds, and look for those characteristics that we can cross with other seeds so that we then get a seed that can deal with whatever the environmental concerns are.
So how isolated is this kind of work? I mean, the idea of saving these seeds, I mean, how rare is this as an operation, as a process, as an idea?
Seed savers are rare. When you think of farmers, you think of farmers who sell their product and they buy their seed from a seed company. Small seed saving farmers are quite rare, I would say, in the United States. And small organic corn and soybean seed savers are an even smaller percentage of that population. And on top of that, some of these varieties, such as the corn I was just talking about, my father is, as far as we know, the only farmer saving and promoting this variety of corn seed. He sells to a small seed company called Southern Exposure, and they are able to then redistribute that corn variety out to lots of small farmers and gardeners across the country. So that's a way to maintain the life of that corn variety. But not many of those farmers, I don't think, are then saving it themselves. And so that's sort of my father's job to keep doing that.
So all these barrels are all corn seeds?
Corn, soybean, and he also does some cover crop seeds, such as cover crops for organic farmers. So if you want organic alfalfa, if you want organic vetch or barley or rye, something to plant during the winter to hold your soil in the ground, to prevent erosion, to keep the topsoil there, then that's what a lot of sustainable farmers are doing in order to maintain their soil structure and the soil nutrients.
And so, going back to what you were talking about before, why, given the mass market we have in America for food and how most people buy food and it's sold and distributed. So why is an operation this small that important when it comes to the stuff you're talking about?
I think this operation is important because we're seeing a need to rely more locally on our food, our local and small-scale food systems. We can see by the massive drought and by these large-scale food security issues with the salmonella outbreaks that in order to grow a healthy next generation, we need to rely on our local food economies to supply healthy local food to our local food communities, because if we don't have a means, or if it's not efficient to be trucking spinach from California to Maryland, we need to grow spinach here. Or if we want to improve our local economy, we need to hire jobs in this economy to feed the people here. I think it's a movement going back to a localized slow food economy where you have the ability to track where your food comes from. And part of the problem with these huge outbreaks is because there's no accountability, because everyone's grain is mixed into the elevator, you can't be proud of your product and you can't track easily back to what farm the problem existed on. And so if you have, you know, we have a label on every single one of our products and we have the lot number and we can tell you what cow it was or we can tell you what field it came from. So if there's a problem, you can call up my dad, Nick, and you can talk to him, and he is going to stand by that product. So his business is on the line, his livelihood is on the line, his reputation and his pride is on the line. And so he has the incentive to grow the healthiest food possible for his local community because he's held accountable. And I think that also gives the farmer a sense of pride, and it gives the consumer the knowledge to know how his or her food has been grown and produced, which is going to lead to hopefully healthier citizens and, yeah, better economy.
That was Sophia Marivelle. But saving seeds is only part of what they do at Nick's Organic Farm. They also run the Brickyard Educational Farm, where young people learn about organic farming. Nick took us for a little tour.
This is the part of the Brickyard Educational Farm right here. It's a vegetable garden. It also, as you can see, it has sunflowers in it and various other things that attract beneficials. And there's a couple of swallows leaving. They're eating the insects. This has been in production all year. And the children that come here from schools or church groups or camps or we've had a lot of scout groups, whatever. When they come here, they get to go in the garden and participate with whatever is going on in the garden. So if we're planting or we're harvesting, if we're weeding, that's what they will do. They always get to harvest something as part of their experience here. Sometimes we'll have the children make signs, and because of where we're located in Montgomery County, we have children that speak different languages, and so we'll make the signs up 3, 4, 5, 6 languages. And if there are some parents here and the children aren't quite that good at spelling, the parents will sometimes come and write these in whatever language we've had them written in, Arabic, Greek. You know, we've had all sorts of names put on these colorful signs that the children make up when they are here. We also will tell them about how the insects work and how there are some insects which are beneficial because they prevent other insects from eating your crops. And there's a curriculum that goes along with it so that they're learning things that ties into their age-appropriate learning at school. And we've had various teachers help us, advise us on how to present that curriculum. This is where the students would gather. They normally will have a lunch here
This is not allowed right now, correct?
At the moment, the farm right now is under what's called a legal stay, and that means that our occupancy has reverted back to the school board, and the school board has said that they don't want they want no visitors here without their permission is what they've said. And we sort of asked them, well, could we get together and talk about that? And they've indicated they had some issues about liability, and for the past 32 years, I've always had liability insurance that names the school board as a covered party, and everybody who comes as part of the groups sign a waiver, a release. But they've never responded to our offer to, well, let's just sit down, talk about it, make sure you feel comfortable, and they're they're not really responding to our request to meet and discuss the issues. If they have issues, you know, that we have met. We don't know what their issues are because they won't tell us.
So. And this is all tied into the kind of, for want of a better term, privatization of the field.
Correct. The proposal for the field right now from the county is to turn these into non-public soccer fields for one private soccer club, and that's the current proposal. And the soccer club sort of indicates that these would be for what they call their premier teams or the traveling teams, which would be the sort of, I guess, the more advanced teams. But it would not be open to the public.
We've served 500 students so far, and we've made in-class presentations to over 1,000, mostly public school students in high school. Our farm-to-school program on the farm is targeted for K through fifth graders, and that's in compliance with the newly mandated Maryland Environmental Literacy Standards and the Jane Lawton Farm-to-School Act. So we're helping to fulfill a need for environmental, outdoor, and agricultural education in Maryland and in Montgomery County. So our proposal for the future would be to expand the farm-to-school program to 3 acres out of the 20 to host 6,000 students on the farm annually, and then to also have 2 major components as well as the farm-to-school program.
So your suburban neighbors want to save this land.
Yes, and every single civic organization has signed on to our coalition letter that proposes turning this land into an agricultural educational center. So the community is very supportive of this vision that we've had to, and our proposal to turn this land into a public agricultural educational center.
Still allowing for the
seed saving.
Soybean and corn growing for the...
Yes. And I can talk a lot about our proposal and what that looks like, actually.
Yeah.
So in March of 2012, myself and 3 other women proposed a response to an RFQ that the county issued for this land. There were only 2 proposals that were submitted. It was ours, the Brickyard Educational Farm proposal, and Montgomery Soccer Incorporated's proposal, and that's the proposal to turn this land into a private pay-for-play soccerplex. And what we propose in Brickyard Educational Farm, because this is on public school board land, we propose turning...
This is on what?
It's on public school board land. This is actually an unbuilt middle school site. So my father has been...
Has it always been that, even for 30 years that he is...
30 years. He has had a 90-day recall... I don't know what you call it. Basically, on 90 days notice at any time, the school board could call him up and say, we want to build a school site. You're off the land. And he'd have to get off the land. And he is totally fine with doing that and has been for the past 32 years. What we are objecting to is we got a call from the school board saying that your lease will not be renewed. And the intent is to lease this land to Montgomery County, who wants to lease it to a private soccer organization. So that's what we're objecting to, is using this public land, this very fertile soil, for a private use.
So to be clear for people listening to us right now, so we're not talking about the Montgomery County school system saying we need a ball field for our kids to play on. We're talking about them giving it to a private company to create their own sports facility that people would pay money to come and use.
Right, right. You have to be part of the MSI club to use it. And they say in their minutes that this would be their elite teams and their elite fields. This would be their first soccerplex development that was just MSI's. Right now,
there's Montgomery County in this area. This is the only land they could build a soccer field.
You know, you should ask them that. That is a great question.
What we were talking about earlier, if this becomes this ball field, this privately owned ball field, then the whole seed-saving operation is threatened.
Yes, the seed-saving operation would be non-existent. It would be shut down completely. For the price of for a decision, once they level this, I mean, once they bulldoze and level this land, as you can see, there's lots of natural hills in it. To level it, you basically bury all of this topsoil, this 32 years of organically built topsoil you're going to destroy just in the act of leveling and bulldozing.
And we're leveling the land.
And that's going to take, I wouldn't even be able to, in my lifetime, recover the soil. I don't think people really understand. Not all soil is created equal. Some soil is, that's why we have arable land and non-arable land, and you can see it on mappings, and that's why, you know, people farm in certain areas and they build in other areas. So this is incredibly fertile land to start out with, and my father has been, through his crop rotations, has really improved the soil.
But as Sophia Maravel said, this soil is uniquely fertile, as is the controversy over the future of one of Maryland's oldest organic farms. For an overview of the controversy, we turn to Katie Griffith. She's the editor of the Potomac Patch and has been covering the Maravel story.
Basically, what happened was in the spring of 2011, Nick Maravel of Nick's Organic Farm, he learned that his lease with the Montgomery County Board of Education would not be renewed, and that instead the Board of Education was going to lease with Montgomery County. And the idea behind that is to build soccer fields on the land. And it's just been a pretty contentious fight, I guess, between the residents of the area, supporters of Nick's farm, and the county and the school board. The people that are in opposition to the soccer fields, that's by a statement from the Maryland Open Meetings Law Compliance Board. Proponents of the soccer field claim that the county went about the deal in a pretty backhanded way, and they've been fighting over the matter in courts ever since. It's been cases revolving around the transparency of the meeting when this was all decided, whether or not the school board had a right to take away the land, or I guess whether the school board, I should say, was acting against its best interest in taking the land to give to the county to turn into soccer fields. That was a case that was before the Maryland Board of Education, so a step higher from the local board. And there have been suits with an organization called the Brickyard Coalition, which is made up of multiple neighborhood alliances, residents, individuals, all supporting Nick's Organic Farm and going against the local board. Their lawsuit is about FOIAing for these documents, about how the county came to this deal. Basically, just a lot of lawsuits are going around in court right now.
So these lawsuits you're talking about, the ruling that's going to take place before the Maryland Board of Education as to whether it was legal or not legal for the County Board of Education to even give this land away to the county in the first place, that has yet to be decided.
No, the Maryland State Board of Education decided that the local board was within its rights. However, the Brickyard Coalition is appealing that decision right now, and I believe that has yet to be decided, the appeal.
How do you see this divide really happening in Montgomery County over this issue? It seems to have really caused a real split among a lot of people. I mean, some people are trying to cast this as just a bunch of wealthy people trying to defend their area from development. Others are saying we need more soccer fields. Others are saying that this is kind of a fight around not just his ability to have his own farm, but his ability to Nick Maravell's ability to kind of keep GMO-free seeds alive and growing? I mean, there's a lot of complexity to this.
Yeah, there's a lot of different angles to look at this fight, and I think it's interesting because, you know, it's local residents that are fighting with their government over something they believe shouldn't happen. At the same time, you know, there are people that are wanting more soccer fields in the area. They aren't necessarily people that are in Potomac. I personally haven't spoken with people wanting more soccer fields in Potomac, but that's not to say that they don't exist.
What do you know about the numbers of soccer fields in Montgomery County and whether or not this is one of the few places left?
Yes, I've heard that as well. I don't have specific numbers in front of me as far as how many soccer fields are in the county. There are several, you know, master plans or what they use to plan these communities, and some of them do call for soccer fields, but they don't necessarily have to be in certain areas per se. So whether or not this is the only place to build a soccer field, I don't think I can really comment on.
Okay.
But I do think that there are probably other areas as well. The Brickyard Educational Farm is right now what they're fighting for, I guess. They're going to be changing the name of, not, I don't know if they're changing the name of Nick's entire business, but as it stands in Potomac, it's going to be called something like the Brickyard Educational Farm or something like that. They're changing their their campaign from Save Nick's Organic Farm to something like Save the Soil or Educational Farm or something like that.
They are.
So that's sort of the big push right now. I think they're, at least Nick and his specific supporters, not necessarily the Brickyard Coalition itself, are pushing to get this educational farm supported rather than the traditional Save Nick's Organic Farm. That's sort of the big deal right now. And, I mean, the court cases are still pending. The Brickyard Coalition is continuing to look into what they can file. The county continues to fight back with appeals and say that they're perfectly within their rights to do this. So it's just something that I think is going to continue for a while.
That was Katie Griffith, editor of the Potomac Patch. We have to take a very short break, but don't go away. When we come back, we'll hear a different side of this story when we talk with Doug Schussler, executive director of Montgomery Soccer Incorporated. Welcome back to Soundbites on Dharmava. I'm your host, Mark Steiner. Today on the show, we're discussing Nick's Organic Farm in Potomac, Maryland. Nick Maravell and his family have been farming on their plot of land for over 30 years. They are the only organic seed farmers in Montgomery County and perhaps in Maryland. And they also run an educational farm for youth. But now the Montgomery County School Board, which owns the land, has handed over the land to the Montgomery County government that wants to lease it to Montgomery Soccer Incorporated so they can build a soccer facility for the youth of Montgomery County. Today we wrestle with the question of what communities need more: food sovereignty, fertile soil, and opportunities for kids to learn more about organic farming, or spaces for our children to play and learn the game of soccer. Doug Schussler is the executive director of Montgomery Soccer Incorporated, the company that would replace the farm with new soccer fields. I asked Doug Schussler about why they want to use the land that Nick's farm is on for soccer fields.
You know, this land has always been held in trust for building a future school. And there has been many conversations over the last decade in the public forum about alternative uses in the event that that they decided that they did not need to build a school here. And, of course, one of the most prominent recommendations that was made in the Potomac Master Plan was that they consider putting in a recreational park here. The use of the land for the farming purposes was not a public policy that was established. It was, you know, a request that was made by an individual, and there was not a competing vision for it, so they said fine.
So what you just described about a recreational park, and I've heard that before, that land could be used for that. It originally was set for a middle school that was never built. But for public use, people could argue a couple of things. One, people have argued that that Maryland Soccer Incorporated, which is a nonprofit but a private organization, that people are, this would necessarily be public use, would it? I mean, because your soccer league is one that people pay to be part of, so they pay to be part of this soccer group that or teams that could play. So it's not the same thing as a public park where anybody could take use of it anytime they wanted to.
Well, I would say that there's a couple of very important misperceptions in that. You know, in Montgomery County, virtually all youth sports, youth recreation programs, or I shouldn't say virtually all, but a strong majority are in fact run by nonprofit organizations. And secondly, our programs are in fact what we refer to as open registration programs. They are open to all. We have approximately one out of every 10 Montgomery County students are enrolled in our programs. And on top of that, when you look at our registration fees, they are absolutely at the lowest end of all recreation programs. Certainly when you compare us to other youth soccer organizations that also are nonprofits.
So, and I think that's commendable, and I think that many people know that about your organization. What about people who would argue, though, that that still doesn't come under the kind of sense of being really public land for public use, for anybody who wants to use it?
You know, when you look at regional parks in our county, they have sort of a very mixed purpose. One is to provide athletic fields for use by organized athletic groups. And then they have open space that is available for other purposes, casual use by, citizens. And that's exactly the model that we look to provide here at the Brickyard site. We looked to have athletic fields that would be fenced in exactly the same as the athletic fields are fenced in at regional parks in our county, along with a considerable area that was not fenced in. In fact, I would say less than half of the site would have been fenced in. The remainder of it would have been open access to the community.
So when you mentioned earlier that the question of the process, some people have argued that one of the problems with this whole process is that it wasn't didn't follow the open meetings law, that this was not really done in a way that the entire community could to participate in these kind of usual decisions about what happens with land use in their neighborhoods, whether they agreed with whether they wanted a soccer field, didn't want a soccer field, whether they wanted Nick's organic produce and seed operation to be able to remain, whether they wanted it for something else, that this was not done in a way that that would really be transparent in the way many people think things should be done.
Well, I think that it's important to recognize that there are, truthfully, not that large a number of people that are opposed to this project, but the ones that are opposed are very vocal. And then within that group, you have a segmentation of opponents. You have some number of individuals who genuinely are opposed to this project because of their perception of an imperfect process. You have some number of individuals that are opposed because they have a desire for the land to be used for organic farming. You have some number of people who are opposed to it because they simply don't want this increased enhanced activity occurring in their neighborhood, whether it be because of traffic or their perception that there will be just more activity going on and it won't be the quiet enjoyment perhaps exactly the way they'd had it previously. In reality here, the only argument that I have, much of a sense that, that should be listened to at all is the perception of process. It doesn't mean that I agree to it, but it means that I respect, that there could be disagreement on that.
So when you say that you think that it's a minority of people, I mean, how do you or anyone else know that whether it's a minority or majority of people who want to see this want to see a soccer field or don't want to see them or want to see Nick's organic farm and seed operation remain or not remain or care or don't care? I mean, how do you or anyone else know that you have majority or minority of Montgomery Countyans or even residents in this area?
Well, for starters,
that's
a great question. How does anybody know? And all we can do is go by our sense of things from being out there and talking. Certainly, we communicate with huge numbers of people within our county. We have nearly 14,000 kids involved in our program. So we get a pretty good sense. We have had, in fact, three or four MSI parents, you know, who have repeatedly contacted us and said that they oppose the project. And I'll just compare that to nearly 14,000 families that are out there. I think it's really problematic when the opposing group sends out, you know, letters to the vast community asking for donations of $500 to $1,000 to fight this project, and they make comments in there that are so intentionally misinforming people.
Comments like, you know, what?
Well, comments like, for example, when they say that we want to have a public use, which is the organic farm, which, by the way, is a private business operation, instead of, and they say, instead of a private soccer corporation. In reality, we are a nonprofit that legitimately is serving our community. And, you know, the fact that we have the reputation that we do for service within our community is what has empowered us in our minds to simply say, you know what, we're just not going to respond to this. This is the kind of garbage that is out there that has destroyed political campaign or political election processes in our country, where people just say things that they know are false or are intentionally taking things out of context, because if they think if they can control the message, that they can then control the outcome. And to me, it's not only wrong. I think it borders on immoral when you intentionally say, I'm going to deceive the public, and then, you know, hopefully it'll help me win. Well, we're just not going to do that.
One of the arguments that people have been making is that there's a diminished number of land in Montgomery County for farming, and it has gone down over the years, and most of it is like industrial farm, or if it's not industrial farm, what's left in Montgomery County, which is way down the totem pole in terms of farmland of any other county in the state, or it's horseland. That organic farms, like this one, people would argue, some people would argue that these organic farms are far and few between. It takes years to create a soil like they've created, and that what they're doing, even though it's a private operation, when they argue for a public good, is the public good is that they are saving seeds that are non-GMO seeds, which many people think, some people would argue, need to be saved, and that this is the huge work that he's doing that is in the public interest, and that the educational farm, well, that it may have come to the end, they're saying it was never in their lease, and they're putting it out now as a way to, I guess, save the farm as well. But I mean that there is public use, and that we need to have this. The community needs to have a organic farm in its midst and saving these seeds, and that there are other places for soccer fields.
Well, it's true. There are. You know, this is one of the things that they, you know, have put out there. They said you can build soccer fields anywhere. It's true. We could build soccer fields in West Virginia, but nobody would go to use them. We could build soccer fields at the periphery of the county. They would not be used. Because people don't live there. When you think about recreational ball fields, there's a reason that they're put in communities, because that's where the people are who will use them. But, you know, the argument about, you know, this location and the GMO-free seed cultivation and whatnot, I get it, and I don't disagree that this is a good location for it. What I disagree with is the somewhat lazy comments that this is the only place that it can be, because it's not the only place that it can be. There are other places in Montgomery County specifically where this could be done, but there's not an effort being made to do that.
What about the compromise? What the folks who support the farm are saying is a compromise to that take away all the lawsuits and all the opposition if they went back to. If we revert the whole thing back to a more open process of hearings about the future of this land, and people arguing for or against soccer fields, for or against continuation of the farm or the Brickyard Education Farm, and doing it in a more open process and starting over.
I have no opinion on that. And you know, I remember meeting with representatives of the opposition group that became known as the Brickyard Coalition way back And, you know, back then I was very naive, and I thought if you sat down and talked with people, you could come to compromises and whatnot. And one of the things that they asked was for us to support, you know, a termination of the process and a restart. And, you know, and I remember at the time, you know, that, you know, my comment was, well, it's not up to me to, you know, recommend a termination of a process. I said, we're willing to be silent and allow you the opportunity to advance that argument. You know, we don't agree that the process has been a closed backroom deal. We don't agree that there have been secret meetings. And so, you know, as far as restarting the process to drop lawsuits, you know as well as I do, the percentage of people that are opposed to this for reasons other than process, you know, restarting the process is not going to change their opposition to the project. They're opposed to it for other reasons. And they will continue to fight it, you know, tooth and nail. The money for this that is coming to all of this is not going to stop flowing from, a group that simply has said to me in that meeting, their closing comment to me was, you have to understand, we will spend $1 million to defeat this. And my response was simply, I just find it very sad that you can't find something better to do with $1 million for our community than to try to defeat, you know, a soccer park for kids. It was said with smugness. It was said with a confidence that we don't lose. And, you know, we'll spend whatever it takes to defeat this.
Well, Doug Schuster, Executive Director of Montgomery Soccer, Inc., thank you so much for all your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
There are others who are also critical of the position Nick's Organic Farm is taking. We also spoke with Patrick Lacefield, Director of the Montgomery County Office for Public Information. He couldn't join us on the show because of the ongoing litigation involving the land, but he did tell us that Montgomery County has a shortage of soccer fields. He said that Montgomery Soccer Incorporated is a nonprofit and that it serves the public good. He contrasts this with Nick's Farm, which he claims has only served one family's private gain. And Lacefield was skeptical of the educational farm, calling it, quote, an 11th-hour dog and pony show, end quote, to save the farm. I called Nick and Sophia Maravel back to let them respond to these claims. So one of the things being argued is that we're hearing from other people who are covering this in government is that, look, this is just Nick Maravel and Nick's Organic Farm is a private enterprise. They just want to hold on to their land, because and this is their money-making operation, and they can just move anywhere else. There are other farm areas, there are other plots of land in Montgomery County they could use, and that this is what it's really all about. This is not public use. It's private use.
Well, the proposed use is a private use as well. But, as I said, it's non-public soccer fields. You know, the community, the county at large will not have access to them. What we're proposing is to preserve this land for the benefit of education for all the children in Montgomery County, not through Nick's Organic Farm, but through a private nonprofit 501c3 organization, so that it would truly be part of an educational program. So I don't think that there's, you know, the interest here is to preserve the land and preserve the heritage of the land as an asset for Montgomery County. If it were permitted to have a public policy discussion on this, which was never permitted, that's why these decisions violated the Open Meetings Act, et cetera. If it were permitted to have a public policy discussion on this, then these proposals could be debated in public and people could become informed rather than assuming the motivation of individuals, which may or may not be true.
You don't really make a lot of money off of being an organic seed farm. This isn't really a money-making operation. I think this is something that my dad has done sort of to follow a passion of his. And I think that there's something about a connection to a piece of land that it might be difficult for people who maybe didn't grow up with that to really understand that there is another motivation besides money that might be contributing to this feeling of, oh, this soil should be preserved for school children and the future generations of our children.
There aren't many places in Montgomery County where you could raise a GMO-free seed, which is what organic farmers are required to raise, with the separation distances that is found here, so that you don't become subject to contamination by drift from the pollen of other crops that are have been produced with genetically modified organisms. So to say that this could be cavalierly relocated anywhere in the county, let me just switch that for a second. And that's definitely true if it's a soccer field. It's not true if it's 30 years of organic soil building in a GMO-free zone.
I wonder where it stands now for you. I mean, where it stands in terms of going with a lawsuit, the state board saying that it was the transfer was all right. It's an appeal now. So, and you've apparently made, others have made a offer, kind of offering compromise, saying let's stop all the suits and go back and have a more open process. Where is all that now?
Well, we are certainly in favor of having an open public policy discussion and to advance the Brickyard Educational Farm as part of that. So we will keep advancing that position to have a policy debate, see what would be indeed the best use of that land in an open public process. Because it was not an open and public process, that's what allows people to frame the argument in any way they would like to frame it. But the fact of the matter is the decisions were made without the input of the general public.
One of the things that people are saying is that the educational farm, the Brickyard project, was really created at the last minute to save the farm. That's one of the things being thrown out. How do you respond to that?
For the past 30 years, it was never made known that the school board had any intention of doing anything other than keeping the property under the stewardship of farmers. And farmers are all under the proposals that you respond to when the school board does that. Every 3 to 5 years, all you get to do is sign your name and send in a check. You don't get to send in a proposal for anything. And there's a 90-day provision in there that if they need it for educational purposes, it goes out in 90 days. The first time, so that it's not appropriate to start a full-fledged educational program with a 90-day kick-out clause. Despite that, I have trained dozens and dozens of apprentices on that farm. When it became known that the school board was willing to make a 10-year commitment to something, the idea for an educational farm came out immediately, was signed on to by about 17 organizations.
Brickyard Educational Farm is a very serious proposal. It would essentially transform Nix Organic Farm LLC into the entire acreage into a nonprofit in 2013. So there would be no more Nix Organic Farm. It would be a way of preserving the soil for school children of Maryland. And we submitted a proposal in March of 2012 to the General Services Department, Montgomery County. And right now we have a business plan for the long-term vision. I mean, we're talking 10-year vision for Brickyard Educational Farm. I'm currently attending a conference in Burlington, Massachusetts, and Lowell. Burlington, Vermont, and Lowell, Massachusetts, sponsored by the Intervale Center and the New Entry Sustainable Farming Program project that is basically training organizations how to start up their own farm incubator program. The Intervale is one of the leading national models for farm incubator programs in the country, and we're really excited to have a national potential model for agricultural education in this country, and we're hoping that this would continue, for our grandchildren. I think this is much bigger than and simply an attempt to save a small farm.
So when you also just said that would mean there would be no more Nick's Organic Farm. Is that what you said?
Right. They're the seed-saving operation in Potomac, Maryland. So the Nick's Organic Farm Potomac location would no longer exist. The Brickyard Educational Farm would completely replace the Potomac acreage. So this is not this is not saving Nick's Organic Farm. This is proposing a new 501c3 nonprofit educational farm.
What about the work that Nick Maravel does in kind of saving non-GMO seeds and creating seeds that people can use across the country and across the world? What happens to that?
That would be incorporated in 7 acres into the Brickyard Educational Farm proposal, where we have an expert seed saver continuing to save these seeds, backing on an apprenticeship program to train a next generation seed-saving farmer specifically to pass down the skills and knowledge of saving seeds of heirloom non-GMO organic corn and soy and other heirloom rare varieties. For the community, the soil being so fertile, I think that we would be losing a huge agro-educational, outdoor-educational, environmental-educational opportunity for our children and for the next generation. We would also be losing the potential food security base for seeds and food located on an urban fringe. We would be losing the opportunity for children in the city to be able to take a field trip and only drive 20 or 30 minutes to a farm in the morning and actually be able to make a field trip out to a farm because they don't have to spend all day on the bus. And we know our public schools are already strapped for time in their curriculum, and it's not possible to take all day long field trips. So I think we would be losing accessibility to people who otherwise wouldn't have access to farms. And we would ultimately be losing the soil that's been built organically for the past 32 years. And not all soil is created equally, and not all soil is tended equally. And this is very, very good soil located in a GMO-free zone. So we would also be losing one of our last and only GMO-free zones in Montgomery County and probably in Maryland. I think a lot of people in politics who are driven primarily by monetarily driven maybe don't really understand our dependence and connection to soil and to land, and maybe having the foresight to see into the future and see that our grandchildren will be thanking us for saving these lands, and they will not be thanking us to deteriorating salt fields.
That was Sophia Maravel. And I'd like to thank all of our guests today, Nick Maravel, his daughter Sophia Maravel, Katie Griffith, and Doug Schussler. The Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites on Delmarva is a production of the Center for Emerging Media and made possible in part by the Town Creek Foundation. Our senior producer is Justin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. For WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.